many of you have ever had somebody at a dinner party or on the street or in on a subway or a bus ask you about Unitarian Universalism? Well, this morning I want to share a reading with you that I just really, I really love this. It's from Forrest Church's book, Born Again Unitarian Universalist. Forrest Church was a longtime minister of the All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City. And in this book, he recounts a dinner party conversation. He writes, "You're a what?" "I'm a Unitarian Universalist." "Oh, I see," the man said, but obviously he didn't. He was rescued by a woman to our right. "I've never really understood just what it is you Unitarians believe." "You are Christians, aren't you?" "Well, not exactly. I mean, we were, and some of us still are, but most of us don't call ourselves Christians." "Do you believe in Jesus?" "Not in an orthodox way, certainly. Many of us value his teachings, but few, if any, of us believe that he was resurrected on the third day or that he was God." "What about immortality?" "Well, I guess you'd have to say that we're pretty much divided on that one." "But at least you all believe in God," interrupts a man across the table. Not exactly. Many of us do, each in our own way. Others of us don't find the concept of God a useful one." "Well then, what then do you believe?" our bewildered hostess politely asks. And this is what Forrest Church says to his hostess. "When you join a Unitarian Universalist church, you commit yourself to moral and spiritual purpose, to be faithful to the responsibilities of religious freedom. You commit yourself to discard what you discover to be false and to accept what you are convinced to be true. What this means, in part, is that we understand that people grow and change and that their beliefs will grow and change. This is if they are encouraged to permit such growth and change." "Well, you don't have to go to church for that," our hostess politely interjects. "Of course not," I replied. "But our commitment to religious freedom and the ongoing search for truth and meaning are important values that distinguish our church from others." Here ends the reading. So, this is an interesting topic, one I really like a lot, but one that has also been hard to be concise about, I guess would be a good way to say it. What do Unitarian Universalists believe? I don't mean you and you and you and you and you. I mean us, collectively. More importantly, how do we breathe life into our UU values in our daily lives? From a sort of a collective place, not from this individual search for truth and meaning. This month's spiritual theme is intention. And during the meditation, I ask you to set an intention, a guiding principle to you want to follow along life's journey. An intention isn't a goal, as I mentioned, something you do and check off at some point in the future. It's a way of being that grounds you. It's part of the process of living. Meditation teacher Philip Moffat explains it this way. With goals, the future is always the focus. Are you going to reach the goal? Will you be happy when you do? What's next? Setting intention, at least according to Buddhist teachings, is quite different than goal making. It's not oriented towards a future outcome. Instead, it is a path or practice that is focused on how you are being in the present moment. Your attention is on the ever-present now, in the constantly changing flow of life. You set your intentions based on understanding what matters most to you and make a commitment to align your worldly actions with your inner values. Goals help you make your place in the world and be an effective person. But being grounded in intention is what provides integrity and unity in your life. What would it be like if you didn't measure the success of your life just by what you get done or don't get done, but gave equal or greater priority to aligning yourself with your deepest values? End quote. The question then that I'd like to pose this morning is, what are our deepest values as Unitarian Universalists? What are some intentions we might set for ourselves based on Unitarian Universalist values? And how might we bring them into focus and integrate them into our daily lives? Well, we bring some of them into our weekly life, and that's one of the reasons that worship is so important to us. It's an opportunity to sort of regroup, to come together, to light the chalice, to be reminded that there is a tradition that holds us, that is a lens through which we can live our lives. The candles that we light, sharing our joys and concerns is another way of forming an intention to care for one another and to draw that circle wider out in the world. The affirmation, a whole set of intentions there based on the covenant that this congregation has created for how you all want to be together and how you want to be in the world. There's a lot of who we are in our principles and in our sources that are representative of our deepest values. But we don't share a common statement of faith, so we don't often speak in terms of what we hold in common, those values that bind us together. It might make really good table talk at dinner parties if we did have a creed or some way of putting it all in a nutshell. Nonetheless, Unitarian Universalism is more than a container that holds a bunch of different affinity groups. Our heritage speaks to several deeply held values that can help us frame our collective identity and our intentions as Unitarian Universalists. One of the most distinguishing values of our tradition is that we have always been defined as heretics. We can be very proud of that. We are people who choose, just simply what the word heresis means. People who sought their own answers to the religious and moral questions of their day. Religious freedom and the right of every person to decide his or her own beliefs is often the first thing that comes to mind when we talk about Unitarian Universalist values, and rightly so. This year, we're celebrating the 450th anniversary of the Edict of Torda, a proclamation of religious freedom issued by King John Sigismund of Hungary, dating all the way back to 1568. Those are some really deep roots. King John and his minister, Frenac. I've learned it as Francis David. We're Unitarians, but the most important thing about that to note for this purposes of today's conversation, that Unitarianism, was a theological position, not an organized religion at that time. Unitarians believed in the unity of God. The Edict of Torda gave legal protection to people with diverse beliefs, Roman Catholics, Lutherans, and Calvinists, all of whom embraced the Trinity as well as Unitarians. That may not seem like a big deal these days, but orthodoxy, as you probably know, was a life and death matter in some places during the 16th century. Being accused of heresy could really cost you your life, and the Spanish doctor Michael Servetus is a good example of that, who was burned at the stake for his heretical Unitarian beliefs in Geneva in 1553. So the contrast is really marked during that same time period, that there was a Unitarian king and a Unitarian minister who were affirming the right of conscience and religious freedom. The Edict of Torda basically said that ministers had the right to preach according to their beliefs, and that congregations had the right to a minister who, quote, whose teachings they approve. The Edict of Torda affirms religious freedom and the right of conscience, every person's ability to determine their own beliefs. In affirming the unity of God, King John and Francis David also affirmed the worth and dignity of every person. Francis David said, "We need not think alike to love alike. We need not think alike to love alike." Now, this quote has become an intention for my life and ministry, and you'll see hanging over the sink in my office, a parishioner of mine from a former congregation heard me say it and was so taken with it that she actually did this beautiful calligraphy of the words of Francis David with a chalice in the middle. So I see it every day, and it's a really great way for me to be able to actually keep it in focus as an intention for my own life. For it means that how we do things is often more important than what we do together. Every person is worthy. Every person is worthy of love. So love, how we feel about each other, how we treat one another, is more important than what we think or what we do. Can you imagine what our relationships would look like if we entered every interaction with this intention? We need not think alike to love alike. It's an intention that has deep, very deep roots in our tradition. So the next time someone asks you what Unitarian Universalist believes, you can start by telling them that we are heretics, but that we're a particular brand of heretic, an open-minded, open-hearted heretic. Pretty awesome to think that each of us carries the seeds of truth and meaning. But sometimes I'm afraid we get stuck there and we don't always bring that other piece of it into our congregational life together. Freedom of choice has too often meant the freedom to reject what we don't believe rather than affirming what we do and affirming one another. Being people who choose is very different from being people who can believe anything they want or people who believe nothing at all. The freedom to choose is a privilege, a precious right hard fought to preserve, a right that is coupled with the responsibility that we have towards each other in relationship. That's why our fourth principle says, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. My colleague Paige Getty suggests a free search for truth and meaning is potentially narcissistic and destructive. It is our sense of responsibility that calls us to consider our relationships within the interdependent web of existence and the consequences of our beliefs. We need not think alike. But as Martin Luther King said, our lives are bound in an inescapable network of mutuality. The ties that bind us are broken at our own peril. It doesn't matter whether it's in our families or in our workplace or in our congregations, in our communities, or in the world at large. Turning away from one another is never a good thing. The ties that bind us, interconnection, is the nature of reality. And we are called to nurture those connections. We, my friends, are called to love. A responsible search for truth calls us to be humble heretics, mindful, inclusive, loving. As my colleague Fred Muir says, our search is not the search. Each of us is a harbinger of meaning, but none of us have a corner on the truth. And here I'd like to share with you some thoughts from my colleague Cheryl Walker and some ideas I've had about an article that she wrote called The Power of Community, The Peril of Individualism, that appeared in the UU World magazine. Cheryl Walker is an African American, and she grew up in the Nation of Islam, an important religious institution within the Black empowerment movement. Founded in Detroit in the 30s, she begins this article by speaking about the power of the collective. She writes, "Because we act as one, we are able to build schools, publish newspapers, and start businesses, which requires conformity. But there was no freedom for individual search for truth and meaning. So Cheryl left the Nation of Islam and eventually found Unitarian Universalism. She says, I fell in love with being an individual in a faith community. My faith, my journey, my religion. It's all about me." End quote. But she also found the shadow side within Unitarian Universalism, the lack of responsibility. "Very little is required," she writes. "All I have to do is sign the book and give some money, and voila, I'm a UU. She found very little cohesion in her congregation. She writes, "Everyone had come thinking this religion was made just for them. This wasn't individuality, it was individualism, worship of the individual. We love our individuality so much, we cannot make room for someone else's. We are willing to give up even a piece. We were unwilling to give up even a piece of our individuality to create a community where all truly felt welcome." End quote. This is particularly problematic for people who do not belong to the dominant culture. Minorities, people of color, young people, working class people struggle to hold on to their identities as Unitarian Universalism continues to primarily reflect the culture of individuals from what has been the majority culture. An important part of our responsibility is this free and responsible search for truth and meaning, is opening our minds and hearts to the truth that people who are not like us bring to the table. Cheryl Walker writes, "True community doesn't happen unless everyone is willing to give up some of their identity as an individual to take on the identity of the group." What she's describing is a both and. The free search for truth and meaning comes with the responsibility to search in community, to make room at the table for people who aren't there. That identity has to be an amalgamation of our shared truth. Cheryl Walker went on to become one of the very few African-American ministers in our tradition. She obviously has a passion for this promise in Unitarian Universalism of shared community, longing and working towards creating what she calls life-sustaining food that can be found only in true communities of shared purpose and values, where the individual is affirmed, but not worshiped. Unitarian Universalism is first and foremost a covenantal tradition. We work together, forging truth and meaning in the crucible of community. Unitarian Universalist pagan Margot Adler writes, "Not everything comes from personal experience and revelation. There are times when gut and heart and intuition are not enough, and it's important to have a reality check. People who will bring us down to earth." End quote. UU congregations can give us the practice we need in building beloved community so that we can transform our collective truth into loving action. Another free thinker, William Ellery Channing, wrote a sermon in 1819 for the ordination of Reverend Jared Sparks that would come to define Unitarian Christianity. In it, he advised the new minister to remember, quote, that good practice is the end of preaching. He said, "You will labor to make your people holy livers rather than skillful disputants. You will labor to make your people holy livers rather than skillful disputants." How often do we value that intellectual rigor of debate? Right? It's who we are. primarily highly educated. We spend a lot of time in places where we've been encouraged to articulate our own ideas about what we believe. But maybe that's not all there is to it. That's a good thing, but there's this other thing. Is being willing and able to come to the table to share our deepest values together. Maybe living with intention is another way of saying holy living. In other words, being mindful that we are all in this together, that we need one another, and that we need not think alike to love alike. Our connections can't be an afterthought in our search for truth and meaning. Our interconnection is part and parcel of that truth. And we're missing something really important if we're not loving one another. And I imagine, as I have had, you all have had these transformational experiences of coming together at the table with a group of people who think differently, who learn to love one another. It's happened in every Unitarian Universalist congregation that I've ever been a part of, and I think that's what gives me hope that we can learn to do that. We have learned to do that. But I think we can learn to do it better. I think that we can give priority to our relationships and let what we're doing and what we think take the back seat on occasion. And in the end, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning is just so much navel-gazing unless we learn to turn towards one another as the most important part of the equation. The search has to move us from our heads to our hearts and out into the world to be truly engaged. And if you ask me, that's one hell of an intention. It's also the stuff of great dinner table conversations. May it be so. Blessed be and amen.